We turn this evening to the book of Leviticus once again. As we progress through this book, we've reached the 23rd chapter. And this 23rd chapter presents us with a new section covering various feasts that were appointed by God. The Lord spoke to Moses, we're told, in verse 1 of chapter 23 of Leviticus, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, these are the appointed feasts of the Lord that you shall proclaim as holy convocations. They are my appointed feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places." And so he continues outlining other feasts through to the end of chapter 23. Now, our focus this evening is on these opening three verses, and particularly on the third verse, where the first of these feasts is described. Well, in fact, the very first one isn't really a feast, but it sets the scene for the seven feasts that are described in more detail in the following verses. The Sabbath, rather than being an annual feast, that is, a feast that is held once a year, was a weekly celebration of the works of God and entering into the rest of God. So there are three things that I want to focus on as we look at this third verse of Leviticus chapter 23. They're drawn straight out of the verse and its structure. We're told that 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places. And these are the three things that I want to draw out from this. The first is that it is a solemn rest. It is a solemn rest. And the second is, it is a holy convocation. A holy convocation. And the third is that it is a day for God. A day for God. So firstly then, it is a solemn rest, we're told by Moses. In fact, the language is a superlative that stresses that it is a day of rest. It is a Sabbath of Sabbatarian observation. It repeats the word Sabbath to emphasize that this is a day of rest. The word Sabbath means to cease or to rest. It was a day that marked a ceasing from the normal routines of the rest of the week. It's a day of rest. It's emphasized again later on in the verse. You shall do no work. So this is a day of rest in which no work is done. And we know from the scriptures, from other passages, that the basis for this day of rest was to be found in God's resting after creating the world. We read that passage in Genesis chapter 1 and into the first few verses of chapter 2, which describes God's work of creating this universe that we inhabit. And that after the 6 days of creative labor, God rested. And he blessed the Sabbath day, the rest day, the day in which he ceased from his labor. He made it holy, that is, he set it apart from all the other days. It was to be different. It wasn't to be like the other days. And he set it as an enduring pattern for mankind to follow his example. 6 days shall work be done. The seventh is a day of solemn rest, or a day of rest. Now, in fact, I think we should probably take out from the ESV its translation using the word solemn, because I think it really conveys the wrong idea about this day. It kind of gives us the impression of people almost mournfully trudging their way to church on Sunday morning and singing their psalms and hymns and songs and trying to stay awake during a long sermon and then trudging home to a roast dinner and laying down in the afternoon for a nice nap and then maybe trudging out to church again in the evening and enduring the day until it's all over. Yes, they have rested from their labours and they have rested very solemnly. Well, that's not really what this is about. It's not solemn in that sense. It's not to be a day of dourness and no smiling and no laughing and no joy. Indeed, it's supposed to be completely the opposite of that. It's a break from labour. It's a break from work. It's a day of rest. That in and of itself should mean that this is a day of joy, a day of happiness. So the idea of it being a solemn rest in that sense, I think we should lose that idea. This is a Sabbath. Emphatically, it is a Sabbath of Sabbatarian observation, a day of resting, of ceasing from the normal pattern of our weeks. When the law was given to Israel at Mount Sinai to keep this day as a day of rest, it had already been the pattern. Prior to the law being given at Sinai, it was obvious that the Israelites understood that the seventh day was a day of rest. But at Mount Sinai, the law was given. We're given the Ten Commandments. And the fourth commandment is a commandment to keep the seventh day holy, not to work. And in Exodus chapter 20, the reason for keeping this day as a day of rest and not for labour was God's work of creation. Just as we saw in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. Because God rested on the seventh day, God's people should rest on the seventh day. But as you've heard me tell you before, in Deuteronomy, in the second giving of the law, when a whole new generation of Israelites have been born and raised up and are now preparing to enter the promised land, Moses gave the law for a second time, and on this occasion, the basis for this day of rest was not creation, but their deliverance from Egypt. What had been going on in Egypt? Well, initially, the children of Israel, the descendants of Abraham, went to Egypt because there was a famine throughout all that part of the world. And in Egypt, through the wisdom of Joseph, food had been gathered. And so Joseph's brothers went there for food, and as a result of that, the whole family ended up living there, and then their descendants lived there, and after a while, their descendants multiplied to the point where the Egyptians became fearful of them. And so they began to oppress them, because they didn't want the Israelites to take over Egypt. And then they enslaved them. And so they were under this severe oppression, this ongoing bondage in which they were put to hard labour. And that went on for day after day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. Work, 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 work. This idea of a day of not working would have not registered in the minds of the Egyptians. And so here they are in Egypt and they are oppressed, severely oppressed. No break from the labour, and then God delivers them. God brings them out. God brings them into the promised land. And there, what are they to do? Work, 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 every day of the week, every week of the year, year after year? No. They're not to do that any longer. They are to have a day of rest. There is to be this pattern of 6 days of labour and a day of rest, a day of relief from the labour of working by the sweat of one's brow to provide for one's family so that they might eat and survive. God gave them this release, release from oppression, release from the burden of working day in and day out, unceasingly. And so, it's a celebration of freedom, isn't it? It's a day of joy. It's a day to remember that God brought them out of their bondage, brought them into the freedom of the promised land. Certainly, they still had to labour. They had to cultivate their fields, they had to look after their flocks, they had to shear their sheep, and they had to plough and plant and harvest their crops. All of that labour had to be done, but it was done in 6 days of the week. And then there was a day of rest, a day of relaxation, a day of ceasing from the labour, and a day of celebrating what God has done. So don't read solemn as an unhappy day. It's a day of freedom. It's a day of joy. It's a day to give thanks to God for this wonderful release from the labours that they had undergone in Egypt. You know, in the New Testament, this day is given a great deal of emphasis in the teachings of Jesus Christ. This day is brought up over and over and over again. As Jesus walked the lanes of Galilee, on this day he would heal people. As he taught in the synagogue, and he observed among the mass that were gathered there, people who were sick and suffering and disabled, Jesus would heal them. And he gained a great deal of criticism because of what he did on this day. The Pharisees said he was working. The Pharisees said he was breaking the law. The Pharisees said that he was disobeying God. The Pharisees had placed the people under a burden. This day was no longer a day of joy. This day was a day when the people were under the scrutiny of the religious leaders. What were they doing? How far were they walking? In what way were they breaking the Sabbath rule? And it became a bondage to the people. And Jesus released them from this bondage again when he reminded them that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was to be a day of joyful remembrance of the deliverance of God from all of the labours of slavery in Egypt. Jesus condemned the misuse of the Sabbath by the Pharisees and the other rulers in Egypt. This is a day of rejoicing. This is a day of celebration. Yes, this is a day of rest, but it's also a day to show the goodness of God and the grace of God and the mercy of God as he freed people from bondage. And so Jesus went about freeing people from the bondage of the effects of sin in the physical disabilities that many of them had. And he showed them that this was what God was doing. He was freeing people from the bondage of sin, from the curse of sin, from the effects of sin. That's why Jesus came into the world, wasn't it? To free people from this oppression, to release them, to serve God, and to do so joyfully. So that's the first thing I want you to observe. This is a day of rest, in which no work is to be done. Then the second thing that we see in this Sabbath day is that it was to be a holy convocation. That's the word the ESV has chosen to use. A convocation simply means that this was a gathering of the people. This was an assembly. In fact, that language, that word is used by the ESV elsewhere. This was to be a holy assembly. In other words, this is a day in which God is worshipped. This is a day in which God is worshipped. Interestingly enough, in the Old Testament, despite all that is said about the Sabbath and the importance of the Sabbath and the risks that anyone underwent if they broke the Sabbath, very little is actually said about what should be done on the Sabbath other than resting. Lots is said about what shouldn't be done on the Sabbath. You mustn't pick up sticks for your fire on a Sabbath. Someone died as a result of doing that. You mustn't gather your food for your meal on the Sabbath. People found that the manna had gone all worm-filled and grubby by doing that. Oh yes, we read quite a bit about what shouldn't be done on the Sabbath, but what should be done on the Sabbath? Nothing specific is actually detailed beyond the fact that every day of the week a lamb was to be sacrificed in the morning and another lamb was to be sacrificed in the evening, and that these sacrifices were doubled on the Sabbath day. But the very fact that in Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 3, this day is described as a holy convocation or a holy assembly, indicates that it was a day in which the people gathered for worship, to celebrate the works of God. The other feasts are described as holy convocations as well. That's how they're described in the introduction. These are the appointed feasts of the Lord that you shall proclaim as holy convocations. They are my appointed feasts. And at the foundation of the other feasts is this Sabbath day. It is a holy convocation, a holy assembly. So what happened? Well, at the very least, we know that the people gathered together at the entrance to the tent of meeting. They were gathered by the use of a horn or a trumpet. It's described for us in Numbers chapter 10 and in verses 2 and 3. Make two silver trumpets, Moses was told by the Lord. Make them of hammered work, and you shall use them for summoning the congregation and for breaking camp. When both are blown, all the congregation shall gather themselves to you at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And we have examples of that taking place. And no doubt, on the Sabbath day, that happened. The trumpets were blown and the people gathered. And they celebrated what God had done for them. They celebrated his deliverance from the bondage that they had been under in Egypt. They worshipped God. Exactly how they worshipped God, the Old Testament doesn't describe for us in any detail. In the New Testament, we know that on the seventh day, the Jews would gather together in the synagogue. We know that they would sing psalms. We know that they would read the scriptures. We know that the teachers, the rabbis, would explain to some degree what the teachers, what the scriptures taught, what they had to say to the people. We have numerous accounts of Jesus going forward in a synagogue and taking the scroll and reading it and then sitting down to explain it. That's what was happening in the New Testament times on the Sabbath day. The people came to worship God. They came to sing his praises. They came to hear his word read and proclaimed to them. And that's what Christians have been doing ever since. Though we acknowledge that the day has changed. It changed from the seventh day to the eighth day. And now, this idea of the eighth day is not absent in the Old Testament. Not at all. It isn't absent in the book of Leviticus. I've pointed out to you a number of times as we've worked our way through the book that some of the rituals of cleansing involved 8 days. For 7 days a person would be unclean, and then they would wash themselves on the eighth day and they would be clean. What was that signifying? Well, it was signifying a new beginning. Life was starting again. It was a whole new start for that person after the period of uncleanness. Now, when we come to the New Testament, what is the great act of cleansing that took place in the New Testament that fulfilled all of the symbols and the shadows and the types of the Old Testament? Well, it was the death of Jesus Christ, wasn't it? It was his sacrifice of himself on the cross to be an atonement for the sins of his people. And on the first day of the week, Jesus rose from the dead. It was a new beginning. It was new life for all who trusted in Jesus. And on that first day of the week, he met with his disciples and revealed himself to them as the risen Lord, the victorious Saviour. Exactly a week later, on the first day of the following week, he met together with his disciples as they were locked away in an upper room in Jerusalem. The first time he'd met with the disciples, Thomas hadn't been there. The second time he met with them, Thomas was there. You know the story of doubting Thomas, who wouldn't believe what the other disciples had said about Jesus being risen from the dead, unless he could touch Jesus' wounds in his hands and his side. Well, it was on the first day of the week again that Jesus came, and that Jesus spoke to Thomas and revealed himself to him as the risen Lord. And there are two or three other instances in the post-resurrection days of Jesus where Jesus met with his disciples as they were gathered together on the first day. And then in the book of Acts, we have, for example, the church in Ephesus that gathered together to break bread, to celebrate the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. And so we have a number of instances of the New Testament church being gathered on the first day of the week. And what are they doing on the first day of the week? Well, they're doing on the first day of the week what the Israelites had done on the seventh day of the week. What did the Israelites do on the seventh day of the week? Well, they celebrated their deliverance from the oppression of Egypt. And what are Christians doing on the first day of the week? They're celebrating their deliverance from the oppression of sin that Christ had achieved through his death on the cross and his resurrection to life again. And so the day has changed from the seventh to the eighth day. It's a day of new beginning, of new life that Christ has won for us through his righteousness and through his substitutionary death on the cross. And so Christians gather, and they gather to worship God, they gather to give thanks to God, they gather to learn from God. Indeed, the writer of Hebrews, in Hebrews chapter 10 and verses 24 and 25, warns Christians against forsaking the assembly, the holy convocation. You see, it's the same for us. This is a day of rest, when our normal routine of work ceases for a day and we give ourselves to worshipping God with joy and gratitude for all that he has done for us. And that leads me into the third point that I want to make from this verse, and that is that it is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places. In other words, it is a day for God. It is a day for God. It is a day that is devoted to the worship of God and to the works of God. For we know that God desires that on this day, as Jesus did, we should not only gather and worship God for all that he has done for us, but that we should also display his mercy by showing acts of kindness to those around us. It is a day for God. God appointed it. He appointed it in creation. He reappointed it in the laws of Sinai. And he re-emphasized it in the teachings of Jesus and reinterpreted it in the death and resurrection of the Savior. God prescribes its focus. It is to be a day of rest. It is to be a day of holy convocation. It is to be a day for God. Our attention is upon God. And God has set its boundaries. Where are we free from the observation of this solemn rest and this holy convocation? Nowhere. It is a Sabbath to God in all your dwelling places. That could possibly mean in every home in Israel, this Sabbath was to be observed. Or it could mean wherever they went, in all the world, wherever they dwelt, this Sabbath was to be observed. There is nowhere where we are outside of the requirements of observing the Sabbath. Because there is nowhere where we're outside the requirements of displaying the character and the works of God. Character and works that he first displayed in creation and that we are to imitate in our lives. In the New Testament, this day of rest is very closely associated with the work of Jesus Christ, as I've said. The whole shift of the day from the seventh day of the week to the first day of the week is because of Christ fulfilling the work of God in salvation, rising from the dead on the first day of the week. But what Christ was doing was releasing his people from the bondage of sin, from labouring under the law, trying without ever succeeding to meet the standards of God. And Jesus Christ came into this world, and he met the standards of God as our representative. Jesus Christ came into the world, and he died on the cross, the sinless one bearing our sins and providing himself as the atoning sacrifice, satisfying the wrath and justice of God. And Jesus, through his work on the cross, delivers us then from slavery into the rest, into the joy of salvation. And this is what the writer of Hebrews draws out in Hebrews chapter 4. Where much of the chapter is devoted to this idea of rest. But let me just read a few verses, beginning at verse 8, where it says, if Joshua had given the Israelites rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then, he says, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter that rest so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. For the word of God is living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing to the division of soul and spirit and joints and of marrow, and discerning the thoughts and intentions of the heart. No creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must give account. The release of the people out of their bondage in Egypt, being brought into the promised land, was to give them rest. Rest from all the labours that they had in Egypt. But in actuality, they didn't have complete rest, did they? As I've already indicated, they still had to work. They still had to till the ground. They still had to plant their crops and harvest them. They still had to tend their flocks. It was still hard work for them, even though, under the blessing of God, the ground would produce an abundance and the flocks would flourish. But they still worked. What the writer of Hebrews is pointing to more than anything else, though, is that they still laboured under the requirement to keep the law of God in order to have the blessing of God. It was a kind of a bondage that they were under even there in the promised land. If you keep my statutes, then you will prosper. But if you don't, then you will be banished from the land. Those were the words of God to them. But Jesus Christ has come, and he has provided a certain rest. And the writer talks about us entering then into God's rest because of the provision of Jesus Christ. But notice that he also says that we need to strive to enter that rest. In other words, the writer is indicating this now but not yet reality for Christians. That Christ has achieved the deliverance that we long for from the bondage of sin and freed us to serve God. And yet we don't experience the fullness of that yet, do we? We're still labouring. We're still fighting against temptation and so on. But nevertheless, there is this promise. There is this foretaste of the deliverance that we have. And this day, this one day in seven, provides us with a foretaste of that. A glimpse of that. A sense of that. That one day the labours will cease. One day the battles will be over. One day we will be free from the tyranny of sin, and we will be able to please God and live for God wholeheartedly without any of sin's contaminating effect upon our works or its repercussions in our lives. This is the work of Christ for us. And so we should joyfully come together, shouldn't we? Ceasing from our normal work, resting in the finished work of Jesus Christ that has brought us salvation, gathering together to worship our God, making this a day for God, a day where he is the focus of our attention and our worship of him dominates its hours. These feasts, they were memorials and celebrations. God's dealings with his people were to be remembered. And this weekly celebration of God's redemption and rest provides us with the opportunity to say, we don't need to carry on in this relentless activity that the world is involved in. We're living in the anticipation of the fullness of the rest that Christ has won for us. We don't need to be in this state of constant activity in this world. We can draw back. We can rest. We can trust in God. God will supply our needs. God will provide for us. Let us honour him by devoting this day to him.